You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, June 1st, Casual Friday. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter, as it is Casual Friday. Also joining us on the program for a movie recommendation, but more importantly, an update from the ground in Wisconsin. Last night, big debate. No video yet. Just reports. Josh Orton, our man in Wisconsin. Also on the program, News Corp. Still in a... News Corp. Still in a... just a ever widening vat of hot water. The big gulp debate continues. And, Bill Clinton. Just more evidence that it's the Obama administration in their muted attacks on the vulture capitalism practiced by Mitt Romney and others who they refuse to name. May just be an outlier when you talk about the party leadership of the Democratic Party. But before we get to Cliff Schechter, A lot happening in Florida in terms of Governor Rick Scott, attempt to purge voters from the voting rolls. Remember, it is always in the interest of Republicans to have less people vote. And as you know, or may not know, you may be confused by this. There are two main programmatic plans that the Republicans have to suppress the vote in Florida. And by suppress the vote, I'm talking about literally disenfranchised people. One is the effort to throw literally tens of thousands of legitimate voters off the rolls in Florida. And I had mentioned this briefly, I believe, during the course of the week. Ari Berman teases it out a little bit more. Back in 2000, 12,000 eligible voters, legitimate eligible voters, which he notes was 22 times larger than Bush's triumph over Al Gore. Bush won Florida by 537 votes, or more accurately, the Supreme Court decided that Bush won Florida by 537 votes. Back then, 12,000 voters were wrongly identified as convicted felons and purged from the voting rolls. This is according to the Brennan Center for Justice. Of course, there was a vast disparity in how many African-Americans who vote much more for Democrats were thrown off. That's just simply the way they do it. the Rick Scott, after the 2010 election, tried to get the then Secretary of State, Ken Browning, to compile a massive list of new people to throw off the rolls. Browning resigned in February. Nobody's quite clear why he did, but he thought, at the very least, we know that he said, we were not confident enough about the information for this secretary, speaking of himself, to hang his hat on. In other words, I don't want to really screw myself in Republican politics, but I wasn't going to engage in this type of skullduggery. He was succeeded by Ken Detzner, former beer industry lobbyist, who came up with a list of 182,000 supposed non-citizens, along with about 50,000 apparently dead voters. Now, you know the problem with having all those dead voters registered is that they're going to come back from the dead and vote. Or there'll be a massive concerted program to find, I guess, illegals or members of ACORN or whatever it is to pose as those dead voters. But of course, do this incredibly difficult operation completely under the radar. So on May 8th, the state mailed out the first batch of 2,600 letters to Florida residents informing them, quote, you're not a United States citizen. However, you are registered to vote. If you did not reply to that within 30 days and affirm your U.S. citizenship, you're dropped from the rolls automatically. How many of you out there have not met your credit card grace period or your electric bill within 30 days? Just in the past month, never mind over the course of a year. Think Progress broke down these numbers and they found that over 20%, I mentioned this the other day, 20% of those voters in Miami-Dade are in fact citizens. The actual numbers may be higher because over 20% responded and said, we're citizens. So we don't know if the numbers, 50% of those letters are wrong, 75%. We don't know if any of those people are still in the country that are supposedly not here legally. We don't know any of that. We just know that at least over 20% are in fact legitimate voters. You have Ian Sancho, the supervisor of elections in Leon County, which says the state supervisors of elections are very, very disturbed. This was dumped into our laps at the 11th hour. Those of us who have been here long enough get this eerie similarity to the flawed felon databases in 2000. This purge disproportionately targets Democratic voters. Two-thirds of the alleged non-citizens on the initial purge list reside in the heavily Democratic Miami-Dade County. The county had the third highest number of naturalized citizens from 2009 to 2011. So at least a big chunk of those people could be naturalized citizens since the time that these voter purge rolls were generated. So last night, the Justice Department sent a letter to the Secretary of State of Florida, Ken Detzner, saying, stop the purging of voter rolls. The letter said that Florida's voter roll purge violated the National Voter Registration Act, which stipulates that voter roll maintenance should have ceased 90 days before an election, which given Florida's August 14th primary meant May 16th. Five of Florida's counties are subject to the Voting Rights Act, but the state never sought permission from either the Justice Department or a federal court to implement its voter roll maintenance program. And David Dayan points out that this letter mentions news reports, and one of the things that we've been talking about is that there are no news reports about this. Think Progress and then Ari Berman just the other day are the only people I've seen who have written about this in any significant way. The second effort that Florida is engaged in to disenfranchise voters we talked about quite some time ago. It was a new set of Florida state rules, which basically put up these huge obstacles and bars to groups like the League of Women Voters to stop it from having voter registration drives. It essentially said that you need to be able to verify these signatures within 48 hours. If there's any violations, it's going to be $1,000 per violation. This is just registration. I want to remind you, there has the number of cases of someone voting when they were not legal to do so is in the ones nationally. So out of the 120 some odd million people who voted, I think, in the last presidential election, there was probably six documented cases of people attempting to vote under fake registration. I mean, if you put Mickey Mouse down and registering to vote, you're going to have a tough time voting unless you're actually Mickey Mouse. So fortunately, the League of Women Voters sued the state of Florida, and yesterday, coincidentally, a federal judge blocked enforcement of these key provisions of the restrictive voting law in Florida today. This is a press release from the Brennan Center. The law, HB 1355, included onerous restrictions on community-based voter registration drives. In his decision, U.S. District Judge Robert Hinkle found that the Constitution and federal law prohibit most of Florida's recently passed restrictions and highlighted the law's impact on the plaintiff's constitutional rights. So good news for people who do want to vote in Florida. There will be less of an opportunity, hopefully, for voter suppression. The one area where the Department of Justice has done anything, as far as I can tell, is in this area of civil liberties, specifically pertaining to voting. So that's the good news for the day. But let's take a break. We'll go and round up Cliff Schechter, and we will talk about the rest of the news of the week.
Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Now, hopefully, Cliff Schechter has been able to round up his kids and dispense with them. Have you done so, Cliff?
We have dispensed with the brood and sent them off to play trains or whatever it is. Those little
not in front
kids,
of trains,
you know?
Cliff. That's wrong.
On the track, the trains only come once every 10 minutes or so. So
right.
I think they'll be okay.
Best way to teach the kids about time and scheduling is to have them play in a railway yard.
I'm a tea partier. I believe all about accountability and responsibility, you know? And if I were to find them on the side of the road, hey, if they didn't get themselves health care, that's their effing problem, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, tell them to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, for God's sakes.
Exactly. I mean, your legs may have been chopped off by the train, but you can then, and then actually it should be easier to lift up the bootstraps.
Right. You'll get them further up. You'll get them all the way to your shoulders.
So that's what I'm thinking. So they should be okay. If you hear a scream in the background, then maybe I'll have to go. We'll see.
It's always good. And then you should play this back to your kids just to show them that you mean business. So I was just talking about how the Department of Justice has stepped into this Rick Scott's plan to purge voters from his lists, of course, to help the Republicans. And this is the one area the Department of Justice has been, I think, and maybe the only area where the Department of Justice has been effective in responding to problems that are out there. I don't want to spend too much time on it. I don't think I've mentioned more than three words on this program about it, but John Edwards, I guess yesterday, I'm not even sure exactly what happened. The jury found him not guilty on one count and then got screwed up and had to go back and deal with five other counts. But that whole case was a joke from day one.
Oh my God. I'm ready. I'm sitting here and I'm ready to defend the hell out of John Edwards. And I thought I would never say that. But we talked about this. I was on the Young Turks last night. We were talking about this. And I just, you know, first of all, if you look at what the case was, he'd been given some gifts, you know, well, monetary gifts by people, and he ended up using that money to cover up the child. And so there's a claim that somehow that's related to his campaign because his campaign image was that of a straight-laced guy. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I mean, what if he had used that money on his wife who was ailing from cancer? What if he'd used that money to start a business? What if he'd used the money that friends gave him in a million different ways? Would that have been a campaign violation?
Right. And the fact is, he still kept getting the money. He still kept getting the money after he dropped out of the race.
Right. So that was the most – I mean, you know, to me, I guess it seems like if we want the Obama Justice Department to clean up Wall Street, we should really go have John Edwards start trading derivatives. Or – maybe we could have John Edwards join Dick Cheney in advising the waterboarding of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and then maybe Dick Cheney would have to go to The Hague with John Edwards. If John Edwards had only made up weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and caused God knows how many people to get killed, maybe he would also be charged by a court of law. We need to play a game of putting John Edwards in all the places where people should have been prosecuted, and maybe something would have gotten done. That's just my theory.
Now, I spoke to someone who is a U.S. attorney who is who had some awareness of this case, and he said that he think what happened was, he thought this case was dubious from the beginning, but apparently what happened is the North Carolina U.S. Attorney General, one of these USAs, is U.S. U.S. Assistant Attorney General, basically wanted to go after Edwards. He brought up this case, and the Department of Justice, sort of, you know, the beautiful thing about the Obama administration is that it's not an either or situation as to whether or not they're politically weak and at times also nefarious. Sometimes they can be both. And
that's what it is. As we always say, it's not mutually exclusive. It's a nice combo.
Exactly. And in this situation, I think they were just like, if we don't pursue this case by this guy from North Carolina, we're going to be perceived as being involved in some type of political cover-up, which, of course, is just absolutely ridiculous because you made some very good points. What if he had gotten that money for other things that could have arguably made him seem like a family man? Now, look, the guy's a scumbag. That's not the issue here. You can't.
Right. That's my problem with the whole thing. It looks, again, like the Obama administration having this thing centristy. You know, you can literally cause the downfall of the economy and walk around scot-free. You can be at banks and cause people to commit suicide because you robo-signed foreclosures and mortgages and caused foreclosures, and you're not going to prison for that. And again, like literally the entire Bush administration, if you went through them person by person at the top there, was probably guilty of some form of a war crime or something of that sort. You know, we could prosecute the Japanese after World War II for waterboarding our troops, but Dick Cheney admits on TV, on ABC, that he approved of this, of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. At that moment, he should have been walked out. He should have been frog-marched out of there and taken to prison. And yet none of that happens. And I'll go a step further even and just say, you know, I'm even tired of the whole, you know, thing with just, oh, John Edwards is a terrible guy. Well, yeah, he is a terrible guy. But you know what? Newt Gingrich is a terrible guy, too, and Rick Santorum is a terrible guy. I can give you a lot of terrible guys who are out there right now. And frankly, there's a lot of people that are a lot worse than John Edwards. I know I'm not supposed to say that because he's supposed to be the worst human being ever. But what he did was terrible. But he's not Charles Taylor, who just got put in jail for 50 years by The Hague for mass slaughtering, murdering, raping, pillaging, and the rest, who, by the way, was a business associate of Pat Robertson's and getting blood diamonds from Africa. But I don't hear anybody freaking out about how Pat Robertson's the worst person ever created. I'm just saying, you know, it seems like every once in a while we pick somebody out who has to project all of our sins onto, and they have to be, you know, terrible. John Edwards is just your run-of-the-mill bad person, and there are many of them out there who cheat on their wives and do terrible things. And you know what? That's what he is. But there's a lot of people out there that have mass-murdered people or destroyed entire economies or caused all sorts of people to lose all of their possessions. And I don't hear people yelling and screaming most of the time about that.
Drawn up
sorry,
a kill list? Drawn up a kill
yeah,
list?
Yeah, drawing up a kill list, for example, would be worse than cheating on your wife with cancer, which, again, is not a good thing. But killing people, I still think, is worse.
Indeed.
So,
and,
you know...
And you, but you raise the issue of the banks, and you know all roads I think you know lead back to this notion that, in many respects, much of at the very least the leadership of the Democratic Party is, while perhaps not having it woven into the fabric of their being like the Republicans, have been captured by big money, and you know this is not just. I'm not quite sure how to phrase it. This is not just the leadership run amok the Democrats run amok. You know, point in case, we talked about Cory Booker last week, and Bill Clinton came out last night. I think he either said this on the Piers Morgan show or Piers Morgan just got a copy of one of the voicemails that Clinton left on somebody's phone. I'm not sure which one.
I was about to make that joke if you hadn't gone there. So well done.
Thank you.
He hacked into a Bill Clinton conversation and was able to produce it.
But I believe it was done in public because of the news reports came out so quickly. But so Bill Clinton goes on the Piers Morgan show last night. And supposedly became the latest surrogate for Obama. This is written up, I think it's in the Washington Post. The latest surrogate for President Obama to stray from campaign talking points, saying GOP nominee Mitt Romney's business experience crosses the qualification threshold. That's not the worst of what he said. I don't think we ought to get into the position where we say this is bad work, this is good work, Clinton told guest host Harvey Weinstein. What? Oh,
Harvey Weinstein was guest host.
Wow. That suggests to me that somebody's looking for ratings on CNN in all the wrong places. But the fact of the matter is he's come out basically in defense of Bain. And, you know, now we have Harold Ford. I don't know that anybody gives a crap about him anymore. Harold Ford.
There's an important circle of people in Morning Joe that care a lot about what Harold Ford does.
Well,
so
but, you know,
there.
Also Ed Rendell, Cory yep. Booker, you know, and Cory Booker and Ed
DeVal
Rendell
Patrick.
Go on every show on MSNBC. They go on every show.
Yeah, and DeVal Patrick, who is mostly a pretty good progressive, it seems, overall, but, of course, centered in Massachusetts. I saw him do a little Bain defending last night on one of the shows. I can't remember.
Governor of Massachusetts.
Yes.
And we had Cory Booker. And, you know, I think the bottom line is, you know, Bill Clinton still is, and I've my problems with Bill Clinton are long time, dating back to the night that he was elected. Well, probably prior to that, but I remember that night. Clear as day, and there's very few moments in my life I do remember, sitting in Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco with all these comedians and theoretically liberals sort of cheering at Bill Clinton. I was like, well, I get thank God we don't have any more of the Reaganite types. But I was not terribly excited. I was aware of him as the head of the DLC. And I have since contended we would have been better off with Herbert Walker Bush, probably, particularly because of everything that was happening in the Soviet Union. That's another argument. But the fact is that Democrats, rank and file Democrats, still have not woken to the fact that who these people are, right? I mean, this is, you know, Cory Booker's still a darling of people, even like us, theoretically, who are sort of the more active, you know, professional left or a liberal activist class, whatever it is that we're in. And Bill Clinton still, you know, is a fan favorite. And these guys really fundamentally, their perspective is what is keeping the Democratic Party from being responsive to the people it should be most responsive to. And also in many respects responsible for the economic problems that we face today.
Sadly, that's all pretty true. And I worked on Clinton's campaign in 96. I volunteered in 92 when I was in college and was a big fan early on. And I wouldn't sit here. I think there at least were elements of activist government from CHIP to family medical leave and things. But the deregulation of the banks that went on there during the second term, obviously Glass-Steagall, getting rid of Glass-Steagall and the derivative stuff, I mean, has been terrible. And obviously the Telecommunications Act, I think a lot of people have a hard time defending any of that stuff. My biggest problem with all these guys is, again, you don't even have to sit there, frankly, if you're so uncomfortable because you've got buddies that are in the private equity industry and you don't want to attack private equity, that's not even a necessity here. It really is specifically what Mitt Romney was doing. You know, and that's what I don't get. Like, why they feel a need to defend Romney?
Because he brought
up his record. So his record is what is.
They want to keep the Obama administration. And remember, I think this Obama campaign stuff is just rhetoric anyways. But they don't even want the stirring up of any rhetoric, even rhetorically speaking, never mind legislation, never mind policymaking. They don't even want the narrative out there that there could be good jobs and bad jobs. This is good work or bad work relative to the implications of society. They don't even want that out there, because if that narrative is out there, if you can argue that there are jobs, there are professions which generate millions and billions of dollars for the people who do those jobs, who engage in those professions, yet adds a net loss in terms of social utility. If that meme even is allowed to live in generically speaking, they're the people they work for, the people they are, will suffer. That's what we're seeing here. I mean,
and the people that give to foundations they happen to run, and yeah, I mean, we'd have to
pay for their speaking engagements, pay for their lobbying, pay for everything.
Pretty much, if you want to sum it up, everything that Evan Bayh did after he left the U.S. Senate.
Exactly.
That's the easiest summary. And you can just combine, the financial stuff, the lobbying, all of it into one big. Because he was hysterical because he said he wanted to go and fix Washington because it was broken. Then he went and joined the nearest hedge fund he could find and lobbied as much as he could and joined Fox News as a contributor. All ways that I've found that are helpful in fixing Washington.
And I don't know if I saw as a tweet, but I just read it. Somebody sent me an email. But, what it's really looking more like is that the rhetoric from the Obama administration is the outlier. In other words, he's the one off message. If you take the former president and the former governor of Pennsylvania, blue collar Pennsylvania is, right? We know that from the millionaire Chris Matthews. you take those
people. Image of the West Pennsylvania coal miner that doesn't have a lot to do, for example, with the Philadelphia suburbs where I went to college. I went to college in Philly, and the suburbs were the main line of Philly was a pretty wealthy place, and one wouldn't call it blue collar.
Well,
they don't like nuance with these states where there's, you know, I mean, some obviously are more blue collar than others. There's a lot of blue collar here in Ohio. There also are some very wealthy suburbs of Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati. You know, you have to get into the nuance a little bit, which they don't like to do.
And you know, look, the point is that you've got these. I don't know who is a bigger spokesperson for the Democratic Party at this point outside of. Anybody in office than Bill Clinton. And he's basically coming out and saying to the Obama campaign, hey, you're going to get pushback from me if you start in any way implying that there could be jobs like this. Anybody working in business could be doing something that has no social utility and, in fact, hurts people. I'm just not going to go there. And so let's attack Romney for, I don't know, being a Mormon or, you know, being heartless or being a robot, but let's not attack Romney in any way that could lead any of the sheep out there to start to realize, like, hey, wait a second, we're getting screwed, and we're getting screwed by rich people.
It becomes a big problem because these guys are all conflicted once they come out the other end. There's exceptions, Russ Feingold being a great one. And others that don't just leave office and immediately search for the largest paychecks, but they are the exception. And so what that leads to is the situation like the one we currently have.
It's a real problem. I mean, I you know, it's something obviously we talk about a lot on this program. But
hey, Sammy.
Yeah.
I hate to do this to you, but the kids are back, and I'm going to have to run a little bit early this time.
You got
to
get rid of those kids, dude.
I know. Damn it.
All right.
It's all love, buddy.
You got to jump?
Go ahead. I got to jump, man.
All right. Go. I understand. I have a child myself.
We will lengthen it next time. Thank you to everybody for listening, and thanks for having me on, buddy.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll go and talk to Josh Horton, who is in Wisconsin as we speak, and will give us a movie recommendation, as well as an update on what's going on in Wisconsin. We'll be right back after this.
Time for a report. We are the majority, not the sheeple. We are the majority. We the people. Why do we walk the walk? Why?
Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him, we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
We are back on the phone, live from, are you in Madison, Wisconsin?
I'm actually on the road I'm heading back to Madison from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
So you are literally covering a huge swath of Wisconsin. Not really that huge, but.
Yeah, well, I would say I'm going about 66 miles an hour.
You're driving right now.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, this will make it that much more exciting. Josh, what is going on there? First of all, was the debate televised last night? I don't understand how this is working.
Yeah, the debate. So there were two debates between Scott Walker and Tom Barrett. And actually, if political watchers might actually get a chuckle out of the timing of the debates. They both went very well. I think Tom Barrett won both of them easily.
The debates, both of them happened in the last 24 hours?
No. There were two debates in 2 weeks. One of them was yesterday, last night at 9 p.m. Central Time, which in Wisconsin is quite late. The one before that was the Friday before Memorial Day weekend. So Scott Walker apparently has great negotiators because, you know, to have two debates, the first one on the Friday night before a holiday weekend and the second one at 9 p.m., they probably could have done this in a closet with a bunch of reporters.
I didn't even know about that first debate.
Yeah, well, that's because it was Friday night before Memorial Day weekend.
Wow. And all reports I've seen.
Last night's debate went really well. The context of the debate was just a couple hours before it gets started. Another story broke on the Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the state's biggest newspaper, about the John Doe criminal corruption probe into Scott Walker's administration when he was county executive of Milwaukee. Already, you've got more than a dozen of his former aides who've been granted immunity to testify in this investigation. And the investigation's about a few things. There's a couple topics. It's use of public employee time to campaign for Walker. So people were sort of doing campaign work while in their official jobs. The second is he set up an illegal email network just outside his office. It's sort of like, remember how Karl Rove did this at the White House? They had an email network that wasn't official so that these sort of emails weren't discoverable, or they were sort of secret outside of the government.
Almost all states, I imagine, and certainly the federal government says you have to keep every email that you send for years and years, actually, after you leave office, and they all have to be sequestered. And Karl Rove had set up on a outside server another sort of intra-office email system so that they wouldn't have records of those emails, particularly because he was corrupting all of these government bodies and having them function solely for partisan political purposes.
And the third thing is there's a bid-rigging question about contracts that could have been awarded, and the fourth thing is one of Scott Walker's closest employees apparently is accused of embezzling money from a charity, money that was supposed to benefit war veterans, was instead embezzled by this aide for personal use. He took vacations to the Bahamas or something.
Well, that doesn't necessarily not benefit war veterans.
It's probably the farthest. I mean, it's probably the longest walk you'd have to make in terms of benefiting war veterans in Wisconsin. But so all these things are sort of swirling around. And Scott Walker had initially always sort of maintained that this corruption probe was initiated by his office, that he authorized his chief of staff to contact Milwaukee County DA and say, hey, so we smell something fishy going on. You should investigate. Well, the story comes out in the Journal Sentinel.
Move your microphone around, Josh. Move your microphone just a little bit. I mean, don't take your hands off the wheel, but... Just you're getting a little muffled.
Sorry about that. So forever, Scott Walker has maintained that his office as county executive, Milwaukee County Executive, the office he held before governor, initiated this criminal corruption probe themselves. They, he said, well, we smelled something fishy, so we went to the Milwaukee County District Attorney to investigate. Now, originally about this embezzlement question regarding the veterans charity. I think the veteran's charity name is Operation Freedom. Anyway, so the story breaks less than 2 hours before the debate last night that actually what happened was 2 years ago, this filing was unearthed, that an assistant district attorney in Milwaukee had went to a judge asking for this secret criminal investigation because, in the words of the reporter, Scott Walker's office was stonewalling the investigation because they were either unwilling or unable to provide the information. And that the assistant district attorney said, look, you know, we should initiate this sort of what's called a John Doe probe in Wisconsin, a secret probe, because if it's secret, because Scott Walker is running for office, if the investigation's secret, they'd be more likely to cooperate. And so it really sort of puts upends Scott Walker's narrative about this probe. So this was sort of the context going into the debate. It was moderated by a local news.
Now,
news
hold on, Josh. Let me stop you here. Let me stop you here because I know you. You're a very cynical guy. Is it not possible? Is it not possible that I can't really explain why Scott Walker claimed that his office initiated it when it turned out that he didn't initiate it. I have no idea why someone would say that. And, of course, we know the DA is not really allowed to talk about these things in the course of an ongoing investigation, so they were never in a position to come out publicly and say that's not the case. But just for the moment, let's give Scott Walker the benefit of the doubt. Is it possible that he was stonewalling this investigation, because he thought it would be unfair if it came out that he was not in any way criminally liable for what went on, that it would make him look like too much of a good guy and it would taint the election?
Yes, that's actually probably the most likely outcome, is that he wanted to give the Democrat every opportunity to look he wanted to even the playing field. And I think that's probably the most likely explanation.
Right, if it comes out that I've been investigated for 2 years and I'm, in fact, totally innocent, people are going to sympathize with me. And if I want to make sure that the election is fair, I don't want to get that extra bonus of people sympathizing with me.
Right, it's going to look too great.
Right.
And I think the slightly less likely explanation, for the sake of argument, I think the slightly less likely explanation is that Walker knew that this investigation was coming and may have, started the initial phase of cooperation because he knew this investigation was sort of coming down on his office.
Ah, okay. And we also know that he, of course, has built up quite a war chest of money to be spent on defense of this investigation.
$160,000 in a criminal defense fund. He's the only governor in the country to have that kind of a fund. And it's interesting because in order to set up a criminal defense fund like this, you need to actually ask permission of the donors for the money they're donating to you to go to this criminal defense fund. He's not saying, he won't say which donors have contributed to the fund. And he also won't release the emails that he and his staff sent on the secret email network.
Well, I'm sure that's just because probably he said a couple of off-color things and doesn't want it to reflect badly on him.
Or there's just a lot of emails and he doesn't want everyone to have to sort of go through the effort of sort of reading all of them.
Right. It's a productivity issue. So
right. He
goes into the debate with this story that comes out. There's also, I know, stories out there that supposedly some newspapers are sitting on some emails that are that could very well be a smoking gun in at least one of the aspects of this investigation. So how did Barrett do? And more importantly, were people in Wisconsin watching this debate?
Well, it's hard to say whether they were watching the debate, but I think it's fair to say that every media outlet in Wisconsin was paying attention to the debate, and every media outlet in the state, I'm assuming, saw the story about the investigation. And so I think there's a couple of headlines coming out of the debate. One is about this investigation. And the second is that Tom Barrett, Scott Walker has been running really scorched earth negative ads about crime in Milwaukee. And Tom Barrett, I think, did a great job calling Walker to account for both what he sort of described as Willie Horton style ads. And, you know, Willie Horton is, of course, the famous scorched earth ad Who ran a Willie Horton? Herbert Walker Bush against Dukakis, right, about a released prisoner who went on to commit more crime. And, you know, he's sort of running these sort of scorched earth style ads. And Walker and Barron, I'm sorry, did a great job calling him to account for those.
And has there been any polling? The last poll I saw was from a week ago. Has there been any new polling, or is that going to come out on Monday?
So two polls came out this week. One was from Marquette University that showed Barrett down by 7. But a lot of folks are sort of calling this poll into question because the same poll also showed Obama up over Romney by 7. Now, it's really sort of hard to believe that there is a 14-point chasm between people who support Walker and people who support Obama. That kind of crossover seems highly unlikely.
There's even it's even harder to believe there's a 14-point chasm.
Sure. The other poll that came out on the same day had the race by it was a poll by pollster Solendelake, had the race at 49-49.
So we don't know. I mean, that's if we average those out, he's down by 3 or so over the course of last week. And I mean, is your sense? I mean, obviously you're in Madison, and obviously this is sort of the ground zero for the anti-Walker sentiment. But what does Milwaukee look like? Where does Barrett have to do well and sort of outperform where he did in the first time he ran against Walker to win?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, everybody is sort of saying that at this point it's going to come down to turnout numbers. And we know that the numbers won't be what they were in 2008. They won't be as high as they were in 2008 for the presidential. We know they won't be as low as they were in 2010 for the midterm election. The question is, are they going to be closer to 2008 or 2010? And, you know, optimistic interpretations show it'll be closer to 2010. Barrett's got to do really well in the Milwaukee area. He has to get out a lot of voters that voted for Obama that may not have voted in 2010. He's got to do well in the Fox River Valley, which is up sort of in the Green Bay area. And I think that, you know, and I think that's why we saw Bill Clinton come out and campaign for Barrett today in Milwaukee. There was a great crowd on 24 hours notice right in downtown Milwaukee. And I think that he's got, you know, Scott Walker, the disparity in this election in Wisconsin is greater in spending, is greater than anyone can imagine. Yet the election is the margin is still so close, which I think is pretty fascinating. And so I think that, you know, Walker's got all this money, but Barrett's really built a great field program. There's sort of a union apparatus that's been organizing to support Tom Barrett. And so
how has Walker been spending his money? I mean, there's money and then there's money. And Walker obviously has a ton of money, but if he is spending it on ads, let's say, as opposed to get out the vote, or if a Barrett is getting, you know, $5 worth of value for every buck because there's enthusiasm in organizing, that's something that can balance it out. I mean, the whole thing of like, well, it's a close race and Walker's outspending him 25-1, whatever. That's great if we're writing a book about this election after the fact. But in terms of like getting a sense of whether or not he wins, do you have a sense of what kind of apparatus Walker has?
I mean, presumably he's got a pretty good field program. Just looking at ads, if you watch TV in any of the major markets in Wisconsin, you know, you'll see 6 or 7 Walker ads for every one Barrett ad. And, you know, obviously that's an issue. Well, an interesting thing is in the polling, and I think the Barrett campaign has done an increasingly good job doing this, is that you see that the polling numbers that the Barrett campaign has highlighted is that the more people know about this John Doe probe, the more likely they are to vote for Barrett.
And more people are theoretically finding that out. Well, It would be. What do you make of the National Democratic Party being so, I don't know, absent from this election?
I mean, I think they've done some good things in the last couple of weeks. Debbie Wasserman Schultz was out here. National Democratic Party, sent an email fundraising for Tom Barrett. What, you know, I think everyone here in Wisconsin has said is that obviously this has significant national implications. But, you know, I think that there has been some value for Tom Barrett and for the Democratic Party here to keep this about Wisconsin. You know, Walker has brought in basically a chain, basically sort of a parade of union-busting Republican governors. Chris Christie was here. Nikki Haley is here today. I think at some point Mitch Daniels was here. I can't remember. But, you know, Barrett has campaigned mainly with by himself, a lot with Russ Feingold, today with Bill Clinton. You know, I actually think that there's some benefit to this being, at least from the Democratic side, about Wisconsin and not about, any particular party apparatus.
Interesting. All right. Well,
money may be another issue, but that may be sort of, you know, looking at the sort of postmortem of the sort of spending from the national parties may sort of fall into the category of the book writing you were talking about.
Right. All right. So with all that out of the way, do you have a movie recommendation for today?
Do I have a movie recommendation?
Why are you pretending like that? What do you mean? Why are you saying that? Like this is the first you ever heard of that?
You said we're talking about movie recommendations yesterday, and I said no, I don't have a movie recommendation. You said okay, just talk about the best parts of the debate.
Well, you barely did that, and I don't see any video from the debate, so you couldn't. Haven't you ever watched a movie on Netflix?
I'm not on the Majority Report payroll. I can't do the. Sort of
nobody comes. No, I understand that, but I mean, you can find YouTubes. There's no YouTubes on there, so you can't. Well, you don't watch a movie.
I have. So it's not a movie recommendation, but it's still a Netflix instant recommendation that I've been watching recently. That I mentioned to you the other day that I've been enjoying Sean Benjamin's Archer, the first two seasons on Netflix.
The last thing in the world I want to hear.
When
I'm trying to relax is John Benjamin's voice.
He's become a tremendously successful voice actor.
What are you trying to do now? Trying to pick a fight with me?
I was just saying I've been really enjoying Archer.
Yeah, no, I get it. He's been on Archer for a couple of years. He's also on Bob's Burgers.
Great on that, too.
Great. That's a great recommendation, Josh. We should have done this Monday, obviously. You don't, you've sullied the Friday movie recommendation, but you did a pretty good job on give us an update on what's going on in Wisconsin. So.
All right, thanks.
All right. Josh Orton, everybody. Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Sam. Talk to you soon.
All right. We'll check in with you later. I don't know. At least we had one yesterday from Dave Hill.
I could give a Netflix movie recommendation.
Oh, God, dude. I don't know if I could take it right now. What are you going to say? Man with John Benjamin Has a Van?
No, I recently saw a movie over the weekend on Netflix.
Dr. Katz?
No, it's called The Wave, and it's a German film. And it's about this teacher who wanted to teach this, like, anarchist class. But this other teacher screwed him over, so he's stuck with teaching autocracy. And he's talking to these kids in this class in Germany. And they're saying how, like, oh, well, this is bullshit. This stuff can never happen again. We're better than that. So he decides to have a little example and see if he could turn them into a group of kids like who listen to every word he says and see if they could actually go back to, and it's a very interesting movie.
Oh, is this the one with the blue eyes? And that's interesting. You know of the what is that? Milfen? There's a sort of a famous study of that.
Well, it's called The Wave, and it was very good.
All right. All right, maybe The Wave. I'm also going to watch that tiny little happy place, happiness space, or whatever it was that Dave Hill suggested. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to head into the better half of the program. The jobs numbers are horrible, and I will talk about them, but I've been saying this all along, that the numbers are secondary. I think that we have been in crisis mode, and that really just simply hasn't changed much. And I guess the numbers can fluctuate at the margins, but people get very excited about the trends. But I know just from the emails that we get on this program and from the number of members who have to cancel for financial reasons, I know that the economy is still in the crapper. We'll talk more about these numbers specifically in the better half of the program. We're going to continue. We're going to have one more. Matt and I are going to go at it one more time about this big sugar drink ban in New York City. I was on Viewpoint last night. They're really pushing the video of it. I think it's because at the end I said, if you don't like it, go move to Paramus. Referring to New Jersey. So there you can go to like a TGIF, I think, or a Bananigans or a Shenanigans or Latitligans or
Cracker Barrel,
whatever it is, and get a massive bucket of soda. But we'll talk more about that in the better half of the program. So if you can become a member at majority.fm, we really need your membership. It's the only thing that keeps this show alive. And there are tiny other things, but 98% of our revenue is from members. So your support is desperately needed. And, of course, you can support the show in other ways. iTunes review, buy our merchandise, get coffee from justcoffee.coop with the 10% coupon code majority. You can buy your Amazon junk through our Amazon link. All of that is found at majority.fm. Support the show. We will see you in the better half, 646-257-3920. And if you're not allowed to listen to the better half, then we'll see you on Monday. Next week, Netroots Nation, I'll be there starting Thursday. Hope to have a lot of bloggers on. I'm going to be doing other interviews, too, that I'm going to be banking, I think, for Ring of Fire. That will be playing on this program over the course of the next couple of weeks. I'm going to be talking to Elizabeth Warren. I'm going to be talking to Sheldon Whitehouse, I believe, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. I'm hoping to catch up with Krugman just to upset Bush and Chains in the better half of the program. We're efforting other people. And, of course, I'm going to be talking to some of my favorite bloggers who I haven't had a chance to sit down with in about a year. If you're going to be at Netroots Nation, send us an email and put in the subject line, Netroots Nation. If enough of you are going to be there, maybe we'll do a meetup. Providence, my neck of the woods. 48 minutes by Route 148 to Worcester. And there's some really good clearance malls in between, I think. Is that what they're called? I don't know. There's a word for that. I can't. I am. All right. See you in the better half.